97.1 FM Talk. On-demand audio.
Audio cut of the day before the end of the hour. Right now, Brian Kilmeade back with us on a Wednesday afternoon. Brian, how are you?
What's happening, Mark?
When you got off the radio show, I don't know if you were paying attention. I don't know if you were on set or anything, but they did this FEMA meeting today that, you know, Fox was airing. And I was paying attention, doing some work. And every once in a while, the president, the vice president would weigh in. They'd ask a question because they had to make it seem like they were on top of this. And of course, I thought to myself, Brian, well, this is very normal. They did the same thing a couple of weeks ago with Helene, right? Except they didn't. So it's just all politics for this White House right now.
It's all a show. And the thing is, so much, they're going out of their way to make it political. They're saying Donald Trump is giving misinformation and Marjorie Taylor Greene is saying that I'm controlling the weather. Excuse me. What type of president sits there and handles things that are political when you're in a crisis? Do you ever see George Bush go, you know, Al Gore keeps saying during the election, or John Kerry keeps chirping? No, you would just do it. And by the way, they were nonstop critical of the war, which was more serious, I would argue, than a hurricane in many circumstances. So I'm just stunned. Number one, the one issue, they keep saying we're giving $750. Why do they make this stuff up? Hey, you idiot, your vice president said we're getting you $750. Number two is you weren't on it. You were at the beach. You asked those people in Western North Carolina if you're on top of things. And since when does FEMA say, you can't, even though you don't see us, we're there? You're lying. You're not there. You couldn't get there. You do not have helicopters in Western North Carolina. Your Democratic senator didn't ask anybody from his Army base to help out. You should have told him to request it. Your Secretary of Defense would have gotten Fort Liberty, which is Fort Bragg. They were 1 hour away. They had 1,000 people ready to go. Not this Monday, the Monday before. That's 3 days later. They would have been able that day if they called ahead of time. But 3 days later, 1,000 ready to go. All they needed was orders. I talked to him Thursday. He goes, Brian, I still haven't heard anything. Thursday night, he texted me, and he said, we're moving. And then I talked to him on Sunday. He said, we've turned this thing around. We're on top of it. But it didn't have to be this way.
Exactly.
Give me his name, because he goes, I would get fired. So that's a problem. You want to blame Donald Trump and the 750, and you should have done a better job, and I handled Starlink. You didn't handle Starlink. What is your problem? There are bodies still yet to be discovered in the mountains of North Carolina.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm concerned that North Carolina is not going to get enough attention because, you know, now this is all going through Florida. And by the way, I'm sure you saw this yesterday, but I thought DeSantis was just brilliant. Kamala Harris comes in, and she did this on Colbert last night, too. She tries to say that DeSantis is trying to politicize this. And DeSantis snaps back, look, you know how many hurricanes we've had in the past 4 years when she's been vice president and the number of times that she's called to help? Zero.
Right. She's not in the chain of command. I'm not going to play games. The vice president's on the line for you. For what? And then I think that Biden tweaked her by saying Ron DeSantis has done a great job. Governor DeSantis has done a great job.
I know, right?
Yeah. Impressed.
Yeah, that was interesting for sure. Let's move on to a couple other topics I want to get your opinion on. I've spent a lot of time here in the last couple of days on this Tony DeCoppola story at CBS and this leaked, you know, conference call from yesterday morning, I guess Monday morning at this time. That's pretty fascinating the way that that's playing out, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, we played a lot of it today with Martha McCallum, and he did nothing wrong.
No.
He read the book. Now, his co-anchors might be angry. Because I know what it's like to be on a show with other anchors. When you take 6-7 questions in a row, they get kind of ticked. But that's not his. That's not the author's problem. It's not CBS's problem. That's something between the anchors. But as far as I know, don't even factor into this. But what did you think?
I thought it was a good interview. It was actually, if I would have, you know, watched that interview and not known anything about the controversy, I would have actually been impressed with Tony DeCoppola actually, you know, asking a few tough questions. This is a guy, Ta-Nehisi Coates, that wrote a book about Israel and didn't include anything, didn't even mention the word Hamas, Brian, or Iran, or nothing like that.
Directions will resume automatically when you return to the route. Do you need updated
directions? Well, we hope Kilmeade's okay because now he's getting the GPS directions here.
Cancel route.
Yep.
Are you okay? You're not lost, are you?
No.
Okay. There we go. But my take was that CBS embarrassed themselves, especially since they also forgot that the two anchors that were extremely biased a week ago during the vice presidential debate also work for CBS News, don't they? Nora O'Donnell and Margaret Brennan.
Nope. Canceled.
everything okay?
Yes.
Poor Brian, we should probably let you go. You're busy. I get it.
No. Sorry. I'll let you finish. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I was on the CBS thing. I thought it's embarrassing that now I don't know how many people actually would hear the audio of what was leaked yesterday or dialed into this story, but it's so hypocritical for them to get involved in this particular story and say, we have these standards at CBS News, knowing their history. On the other hand, I will say this. Bill Whitaker surprised me with his questioning of Kamala Harris. It was rather intense. I give him credit for that.
But the lawyer is not buying into it. And I love the fact that they're divided about the whole thing. They say, you know, this is a joke. I think this is shows you when it's so obvious that the anchor was right, and it's so clearly that CBS thinks the anchor was wrong and thinks it should apologize. Evidently, he was tearing up in the meeting. Why is he tearing up? He has six questions. If you want to apologize to your co-anchors, do it. But he read the book. The guy has evidently he's got. His first wife and his kids are in Israel. Why would he not take it personal? So, I mean, I don't even know how to pronounce his last name. I'm busy at that time. But he was very calm, and I don't think the author was upset at all.
No.
I think he likes this.
Look, they both handled it pretty well. It was, and I get what you're saying, because when I was watching, I thought, oh, okay, Gail and the other dude are kind of sitting on the sidelines. Tony's taking charge here because he's got some questions. They even mentioned his body language, but at the end of the interview, it was a lighthearted exchange and goodbye. He obviously knows him very well. It would have been reckless and journalistic malpractice had he not conducted the interview in that fashion, considering the topic.
Right.
And considering the week.
And look, you don't think Israel should exist? I mean, his argument, I would love to have had that argument with this guy, had this challenge, because his idea is, well, everyone's pro-Israel, so I want to be pro-Palestinian. I mean, that's basically it. And he feels like he wants to be the oppressed. It's the same mindset, less civil, of these idiots in Columbia, these idiots at Harvard, these jerks stopping on the parkways, pro-Palestinian, the oppressed. The white people stink. America is our bullies. We don't deserve this land. We don't deserve this country where, we have fake freedoms over here. And, you know, I'm so upset about their mindset. Here's what I'm encouraged by. We're all done with it. Most Americans are done with that attitude. We're done with the self-loathing. We're done with we're done pretending that the Israelis might have, the Palestinians might have a point. The Palestinians want to be rid of the mobsters at Hamas. The Lebanese want to be rid of Hezbollah. The Saudis in the Middle East want to be rid of Iran. We are trying to find their point of view. That is, we're pretending the bad guys have a point. They don't. And the people that have to deal with them on a daily basis, they're fed up, and they wonder why we're so tolerant. And believe me, Saudi Arabia and these guys, They're not coming against Israel for a reason, because Israel's right. They can't believe what Israel's done to Hezbollah. And then Iran is scared to death that they're coming for their oil wells, their military bases, and for the Grand Ayatollah. And they have a right to be. Take them all out.
Absolutely. What's coming up on Saturday night, Brian?
I'm going to take the rally. So I'll be getting out, and I'm going to have Kimberly Strassel and Kimberly Strassel joining me at the end to wrap it up and tell me what she thinks, because she wrote a great column last week saying this is what Trump's still not doing. And I loved it because he's right. She's right. He's maximizing the people that like him, and he's not opening up to the people that are thinking about liking him. And I want to get that perspective and see if he includes it in the rally. So we'll be live.
Awesome. Have fun with that. Enjoy the rest of the week. We'll talk next week.
Go get him more.
All right, take care. That's Brian Kilmeade. His show, by the way, on Saturday night airs at 8 p.m. Central here in the Midwest, One Nation with Brian Kilmeade. You know, I read something today in the New York Times, Sue, and I've said this before, and it is true. I read a lot of different things from different perspectives. I watch different perspectives, which is one of the reasons I like Real Clear Politics, because if you go to the front page of RCP, you'll see a variety, you know, of opinions on all kinds of topics of the day. Let me give you a real-life example here. Wednesday, October 9th. Harris, so they just kind of collate the stories. The first story, Harris unable to answer basic questions on 60 Minutes. Dan McLaughlin, New York Post. Dan's a guest, regular guest on the show. The next one, Republicans' closing message, we lie to you. A.B. Stoddard, The Bulwark. So the other side, those are the never-Trumpers at The Bulwark. My former mentor, Charlie Sykes, started that. So they go kind of back and forth. They put all the opinions up there, and you can kind of choose what you read. So the New York Times kind of hooked me this morning. They had a piece that said, 65 doctors, nurses, and paramedics, what we saw in Gaza. And there's a guy by the name of Dr. Feroz Sidwa, who is a trauma and general surgeon who worked in Gaza from March to April. And it's pretty harrowing, some of the stuff in here. I worked as a trauma surgeon in Gaza from March 25th to April 8th. I volunteered in Ukraine and Haiti. I grew up in Flint, Michigan. He gives the background, blah, blah, blah. He said, nearly every day I was there, I saw a new young child who had been shot in the head or chest, virtually all of whom went on to die, 13 in total. At the time, I assumed this had to be the work of a particularly sadistic soldier located nearby. But after returning home, I met an emergency physician who had worked in a different hospital and said this, I couldn't believe the number of kids I saw shot in the head. To my surprise, he responded, yeah, me too, every single day. Now, they go on and they list, and there's all these people, 44 doctors, nurses, and paramedics that saw multiple cases of preteen children who had been shot in the head or chest in Gaza. And they all report on this. I saw several children shot with high velocity bullet wounds in both the head and the chest. But what's missing from all this is the evil and the terror that was inflicted upon the Israeli citizens, including women and children, when they were raped and tortured last year, a year ago, during October 7th. So while I don't know what's going on with the kids that are being shot, and we don't want innocent people to be shot, we also know that Hamas uses as their headquarters hospitals, apartment buildings, residential areas. So how would the New York Times have covered this, for example, in during World War II, right? With probably a lot of innocent German people. There were innocent people all across Eastern and Western Europe that died. And around the planet in World War II. But it was the Nazis who kind of started it, wasn't it? They were trying to invade the rest of Europe and take over the world. And they were doing things that were horrifying. Now, we didn't know the extent of all that until the end of the war. But in this particular situation, there's a lot of empathy in this New York Times piece for the children. And there should be, because these are innocent kids, young. I have a 9.5-year-old. So I don't know why people are being shot in the head. But it's this effort in the legacy media, in the New York Times, and some of these publications to say, you know what? We have to show that the Israelis do really, really bad things too. We're going to forget what happened a year ago and why they have a mission to save their people and their entire country. So it's interesting the way that journalism works, or supposedly works, because I'd like to see the same story with 64 nurses and paramedics and ER doctors in Israel, talking about what's happened over there. I don't think we're going to see that, though. I really don't. Audio cut of the day is coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com.